This is the beginning of Class 9.
Why doesn't one moment of anger destroy one moment of virtue?
Yeah.
You know, and he just said, well, you can't understand the subtle workings of karma.
You can't understand the subtle workings.
I'll ask it again eventually. Okay.
He just said, well, you can't understand the subtle workings of karma.
You can't understand the subtle workings.
again eventually. Okay.
I'll check. I will check. I can ask them. There's a long thing in the Majjhimika scriptures because it's so extraordinary. You know, Shanti gave a statement that you lose 100 kalpas of friendship during the second of the year. It's so extraordinary that they do discuss it. And I'll look at it.
Could you say something about this idea of merit and virtue? Are you using that interchangeably?
I'm using them interchangeably. Technically, merit and virtue, translate them as sunam and gewa, are a little bit different.
But when people say, you know, you're accumulating merit, you know,
you can think of good karma, which is bhakti.
So you've got to accumulate a lot of a certain kind of bhakti, is all they're saying.
Yeah. Not the kind of bhakti that creates a, what we call a numbing result, a ripened, technically a result of temporary pleasure or temporary pain.
But it's only the emptiness going in. No, you
must collect virtues, because those virtues allow you, the definition of virtue was what? I mean, in the short run, blah, 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 in the long run, there is that good result. You do have to plant jillions of bhakchaks to see yourself as a Buddha. That's true. And then, while you're being a Buddha, they feed on each other. You achieve fusion. You know, where the fuel creates more energy than the result, the reaction is more energy than the fuel. And that's what he's doing. The Buddha is just doing that. Okay, tamen na. So san means intermediate birth. Me means none. Na means five. So we call the five immediateness these five immediate deities. Immediate means there's no medium between them. You do it in the life in which you collect the karma, you must experience hell as which of those three? Do you remember the three experiences?
The second one.
Yeah. One kind of karma you have experiences in this life, one kind of karma you have experiences in beyond the next life, and then this is that middle one. Kenya no mirror, you give to me. You must experience it in the next life immediately with no intermediate birth. Is there no bardo? No, there is a bardo. You know, some Buddhist scholars have said that means that there's no bardo, but immediately, with no intermediate birth. Is there no bardo? No, there is a bardo. You know, some Buddhist scholars have said that means that there's no bardo, but that's not true. They don't accept that. Immediate means in the next rebirth life. They don't count bardo in that. Yeah.
So it's not just the experiencing of the result in the next life, it also produces the next life as well, right?
It is a panjekulé. It must be. Mm-hmm. It's not just intoxicated. But we'll get into that. We'll get into another argument about that.
Michael?
So, yeah?
If my Maitreya makes his presence known, does that have any effect on...
You couldn't see him.
If you were in hell.
No, I mean, people who get that shit, you know, who cut that root of virtue, they create what are called jippas. And jippas are... like bhakchak, they're a kind of energy that stays in your mental stream, and they obstruct you from seeing those things. You couldn't see them. You'd go to meet the Dalai Lama and you'd get in a car accident. You know? you couldn't see them. Or you'd think, there was a monk named Ledgar who served the Buddha for 12 years, and he said, I never saw any worthwhile quality that he had. I think I might have heard this. You know, he got this. The quote is in the sutras. He has this little halo around his head, but otherwise, I've never seen anything extraordinary. I've served him for 12 years. I haven't seen anything unusual about him at all. So it's possible. Coming on. So I'll give you the five. They're very important to know, obviously. Okay. It's a big subject in the Abhidhamma, and it's accepted by all schools. Ma sutta. What do you think ma means?
Ma.
Ma means mother. Sutta means to kill, to murder. To kill your mother. Right, that's the first in the list. By the way, first in the list doesn't mean the most serious. We're going to get into that later. But this list is the traditional order, but it's not in order of any severity. So ma sutta is the first one. You'll see a debate in your reading. I thought you'd find it interesting to hear it in there. because I have time to make a note. What if a woman conceives a child and then the embryo is transferred to the womb of another woman? Which woman does he have to kill to get a master? You know, after he's born and grows up. And they say the one who conceived him. Even if he spent all 8 months or something, you know, in another woman's womb.
What if the woman dies in childbirth? Didn't he through the directly kill her?
There are four ways of being born, and it's covered in the first chapter, I think, or the second chapter. And there's a list, you know, there's four ways you can be born: from an egg, from a womb, from heat and wetness, and then from, you can be born complete, like Padma Sambhava was born complete, you know, just as the hell beings are born complete. They just show up there already ready to suffer. They don't go through a childbirth and everything. And they say those births are rated by preference, and the womb birth is like rated kind of low because it hurts the mother so much. I don't think there's no intention, right? There's no identification, there's no undertaking. The only thing you have is the completion, so probably some karma. By the way, the whole point of that, talking about those four elements and then the three elements inside the second element was that you can decide now yourself what you could do. You know? It's not a full karmic path. But you know there was a completion. She did have the pain. Well, I think you can get close. I was close. My mother asked me to help kill her, you know, when she had cancer. And then also I was sort of, you know, I told her to take Tibetan medicine and not to do her radiation treatment. You know, I mean, you have to be careful about it. You can, out of carelessness, you can contribute, you know. You have to be careful.
And if she had said yes and you went ahead and gave them the permission and they pulled the plug right before she would have died anyway and you didn't know the difference, it wouldn't have been a complete karma.
Yeah, right. Ja is the enemy. Jo means to destroy. Arhat means foe destroyer. Sometimes you see it translated as foe destroyer. And if you remove those permanently, you achieve nirvana. So you could have done it this afternoon, you could do it tonight.
And sopa is to kill?
Yeah, sopa means to kill. So to kill an arhat. Hey, Gendingi.
Gendingi.
Yenchepa.
Yenchepa.
Gendingi.
Gendingi.
Yenchepa.
Yenchepa.
Okay. Gendin means what? Do you know? Gendin? First I know his name. Gendin means Sangha. The Sangha. The community of monks. It has to be, technically, when you study Vinaya, it has to be four monks or more. You don't have a Gendin, it's like a quorum of monks. A single monk is not called a Gendin. It's a Gelong. And then four monks or more is a Gendin. So, Yen means to divide or to split up. Chepa means to do that. So this means to cause a schism in the community of monks. Split up the monks.
In the previous one, did we have to have proper identification? Last class you
That's
about
a good question. That's a good question.
You said the motivation didn't matter.
Well, they said it was less important in that case of that extraordinary object, whether you know, in the case of the Bodhisattva.
No.
I don't believe you have to. I think it's from the point of view of there being such an extraordinary object, and not to do with your motivation. I don't think you have to know that there are Jachama to get the karma. In fact, I can think of an example. Udayana was killed by his son, and I don't believe he had any idea he would be.
know, I don't remember any mention of some cared or knew about it.
You can get bad karma just for thinking badly or speaking badly to an arhat, whether you know that that's what they are or not, according to what the Buddha taught us in the last class, because you don't know.
Yeah, it seems like you get a full karmic path. You know, it would seem like you'd have to know to collect a full karma. And does it have, would it be still be a samme if you didn't have identification? I believe it is. Just from this extraordinary nature of the object. Okay. Last one. It's a long one. Say, Jai Shigla.
Jai Shigla.
Nyan Samgi.
Nyan Samgi.
Thar Jimba.
Thar Jimba.
Jai Shig means a Buddha. Jai Shigla. Sugata. Those who have gone to happiness. La, to him. Nyan Samgi. Nyan Sam means with evil intention. And it means that you really wanted to kill him. With an evil intention. It means that you really were intending to kill him. Trag Jimba means, Trag means blood. And Jimba means to draw the blood of the Buddha. With evil intention. Okay, and they say, in the this is Abhidharma system, right? Because a Buddha can't suffer, obviously. Right. But there is a story in the Hinayana scriptures, well, it's in the scriptures, that the Buddha's half-brother, who was insanely jealous of the Buddha throughout his whole life, you know, prepared a... And several people tried to murder the Buddha. I mean, people invited him to dinner and tried to murder him. It wasn't like... nothing worked, but... He made a catapult. The brother made a catapult and waited for him. Shot the catapult, it hit the Buddha's leg, and it made a small cut on his foot. In Mayana way, the Buddha was just allowing him to do it and pretending to bleed. But the Buddha can't, technically, a Buddha can't suffer. But that's the Abhidharma position is that it's just to even try to do it is the bad deed.
So to try to kill?
Yeah, to try. It means to try to kill a Buddha, but it does say to draw blood from a Buddha with evil intention. Those five can get you to to hell directly. I've been real good
about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would that
create a situation where you could be a clergy, where
you have a teacher
who is that great?
Perhaps.
No. We're going to go into it very deeply.
All right.
I mean,
then
we're going to spend a lot of time on it. Okay. That's. By the way, now that you've mentioned it, number four of all of them will always cause you to be born in the lowest hell. Called a Vichy. Okay? The lowest hell. Hell where you have absolutely not a second respite. Not a second. There isn't a single moment when you are not experiencing a pain which is beyond any pain that anyone can feel in this world.
Why is it?
Why?
Why number four?
We're going to talk about it.
We had the five in a previous course.
Yeah.
And we emphasized on several of the occasions that it's impossible technically to.
We're going
to
talk about it. I know. We're going to talk about it. Trust me. So, the other four, you have to go to hell, but not necessarily to the lowest hell. All right? Number four, Genden Yenche, to split up the Sangha, that you must go to the lowest hell. And you must stay there for one parkelp. Parkelp is a beautiful thing in the Abhidharma third chapter. It describes how the universe forms over the period of, I think it's 60 kalpas. I tried to figure out what a kalpa is. Kalpa is very difficult. Buddha Rinpoche back in 1300s tried to calculate it. The definition of a kalpa is something like this. I mean, the first people on this planet live like in a paradise, like a garden of Eden. Their lifespan is up to 80,000 years long. They live to 80,000. And then they start to mess up. And there's a beautiful story. So it's very similar to the Garden of Eden story. And they start to commit non-virtues. And then eventually, because of that, generation after generation, they reach a point where people live only 10 years old. So to calculate the length of an eon, you'd have to have a kalpa. You'd have to do this mathematics. I haven't got this thing. It's many, many zeros, 60 zeros.
Is this
the
Abhidhamma?
It's accepted in all schools.
No, but I mean,
it is in the third chapter. It's at the end. It's a beautiful thing. I can give it to you sometime. Translate it.
Is every world system like that, or just this?
Every world system follows the same pattern. So that's one called a parkal, and there's 60 of them cycles. People start. It's like a nuclear war. It's very similar to a nuclear war, and only the people living out in the wilderness survive. And then they meet in the towns, which are all ruined and destroyed, and the people are all dead. And they say, look. This is terrible. We should really follow the 10 virtues, you know. So they all decide to follow them. And then the lifespan starts to increase again. So there's this huge thing. That's a parkal. The time that takes to go the 80,000 years of lifespan in one generation down to 10 again, you know, that's a parkal. 60 of those make a great eon. And a great eon has the formation of the world is there, that takes the kalpa, and then the destruction of the world by one of several means, one of which is like an atomic fire. One is that the sun supernova and destroys the planet. And there's beautiful, it's in the Abhidhamma. So a kalpa is a hell of a long time, no pun intended. You have to stay a parkal in the lowest hell.
Parkal
is one of those loops.
160.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even want to guess, but it's trillions of years. More than
that. Yeah. What happens if someone caught the student in the Sangha being raised in a non-clergy?
We'll talk about it.
Causes the schism in the Sangha or in the community of monks? And which way do you mean it?
Well, I'm talking about tonight is some man. This is a very specific deed, and I'm going to talk more about it. When I say Sangha, I mean monks, ordained monks. I don't mean, he's talking about literal Sangha. Literal Sangha is anyone who's seen emptiness directly. Once you've seen emptiness directly, you're Sangha. You're the real Sangha. And then this is, we are the figurative Sangha. People only are real Sangha. Not the real.
So this refers to the real or the
figurative? No, the figurative.
The figurative.
Okay. We have another profile. Okay. Profile of the person who commits it. And then you get into, you see, this deed, the tamme, the immediate misdeed of this, has to be done, luckily, while a Buddha is on the planet. While the historical Buddha is on the planet. Because it's dividing his direct followers.
Oh, so it's only his one.
We can't do this. No. We cannot commit this punishment. Okay, it has to be done while the Buddha is present on the planet.
You're from number five?
No, the number four hand. The splitting up of the monks has to be done on this planet. And it's a historical event. It's a historical pattern that reoccurs on each planet. And there's a lot of details about when it can take place. But basically, I better give you all the details. The monk who does the split, the monk who incites the split, first of all, he's a monk. He's a full monk. He's a gelo. He's a bhikshu. He has to be a full monk. Secondly, he has a very good morality. He keeps his morality very well. Thirdly, he's very intelligent. He's an intellectual type. They say he has to be pretty attractive. He has to be, like, charismatic, because he has to break up the followers of the Buddha. So he's not a dumbhead. He's an ultimate dumbhead, but he knows his stuff. He can recite all the scriptures.
Smart.
His reputation is good. You know, he's a good monk, and then he sets forth a list of five things to achieve nirvana, and they don't have anything to do with it. Like you can't eat yogurt, and you shoot it where there's ropes with the patches on them and things like that. There's a, it's a list. Don't eat meat.
Are you saying this is the case of all world systems or just this one
particular? It seems to be that the Abhidharma is saying that this is a world, that this is a pattern in world systems. But there's always, and then there's a, you can read it in your reading, but there's a limit of time. It can only happen after, it can only happen 12 years after the Buddha has first started teaching. During the first 12 years of the Buddha's teaching, everyone is so happy and so into it that they have this kind of special unity, and it can't happen. And it's like a Dharma center. I mean, this, you know, when you're first learning everything, it's very fresh, it's very interesting. I'll sooner or later I'll run out of interesting new things to tell you, and then it's just whether you practiced it or not, you know. I mean, right now it's kind of interesting, not only because you're practicing it, but because it's the first time you've heard a lot of things. There will come a time when you will have heard everything, and I can get up here and repeat it, but then it's just a question of whether you've practiced it or not. And then it's not as fresh, it's not as interesting, I can tell you. It's a very dangerous stage to reach. They describe it in the scriptures. It's called butter on leather. Like if you keep butter in a leather pouch, then sooner or later the leather gets saturated, it starts to crack, and can't absorb any more butter. And that's a danger, it's a spiritual danger, that you reach a point where you heard all these things. And what you're really attracted to is more information and not practicing. That's a very dangerous point. So anyway, it can't happen right after the Buddha's... It doesn't happen also right after the Buddha starts teaching. It cannot. Because everyone is so happy. The 12 years thing is that the Buddha, after the Buddha starts teaching, and as his followers spread out over that country or that planet, they start to introduce corruptions into the teaching. And the last page of the Abhidharma is very sad. I mean, you cry when you read it. You know, you spend 2, 3, 4 years studying Abhidharma. You get to the last page, and the Buddha describes how the teachings will die. You know, he goes through long descriptions of how they will die, when they will die, why they will die. You know, his own teachings, he sees they will die out in the world.
The Abhidharma was written by the Buddha?
No, but the Vasubandhu, it's pretty much a compendium from the sutras. So he quotes the sutras. And if you get to read the sutras eventually, they're quite nice. You see everything. Yesterday I found a lot of quotations about... They say the Tibetan Buddhists made up all these things about Lama devotion and things, but the sutras are even more radical. I was reading one yesterday, 1,000 pages long. Very powerful. So, anyway, it can't happen right after the Buddha starts teaching. It cannot happen in the first 12 years. It cannot happen at the end of his life. We call it when he reaches his final nirvana. I always used to be confused about that expression. You hear it in Hinayana a lot, you know. The Buddha reaches his final nirvana. I said, well, what's the difference between his final nirvana and his original nirvana? You know, is it really nirvana because he achieved nirvana a long time before that? He got rid of his bad thoughts. I always used to confuse it. That nirvana has nothing to do with, you know, the normal nirvana. It just means for the Buddha to withdraw his emanation from this planet. So when they say the Buddha reaches his hari nirvana, it has nothing to do with nirvana. It's just the act of withdrawing his emanation from this planet. And according to Mahayana, he doesn't die. Obviously he doesn't die. He just decides to withdraw. And he doesn't even decide. It's an automatic process when there's not enough people on the planet to benefit. If no one on the, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah, you know. If there's not one good person on the planet to see the Buddha, the emanation is withdrawn automatically. He appears to die.
Is the point of teaching 4 and 5 now, when that's not an issue, to keep that line pure so that information keeps?
That's one, and then we're going to talk more about it. There's what we call the Nyewe Sambe. Close to the 5. There's 5 that are close to the 5. Okay? And that's also things. They also lead to a helper. Definitely to a helper. So, that's another. What else? It cannot occur before the 2 major students appear. That's Shariputra and Maudgalyayana. You want their names?
These are called the supreme pair. They're called the pair. And the only other word that pair is used is in the secret teachings for a special. It involves the word for tantric enlightenment. But anyway, that supreme pair must be on the planet for the schism to occur, because they patch it up within 24 hours. One of them brings the monks back together within 24 hours.
So you mean this is a pattern that takes place every
time?
It
seems to be a pattern that happens.
That there is a
Buddha on any planet.
It seems
like that. That's the feeling you get if you translate it.
It's strangely detailed.
Yeah, it is. It can't happen after the Buddha. I'm sorry, the reason it couldn't happen when he passed away was that right after he passes away, that everyone is too sad. There's a unity brought about by the depression of the students. They're so upset. They're so mutually and communally upset that they can't think to have Buddha. And you'll see the others in your reading.
Are you describing something that inevitably happens every time a Buddha appears, or if it's going to happen while a Buddha appears, if it happens this way?
I don't know for sure. The Abhidharma say that this particular Buddha, Shakyamuni, by the way, there's thousands of Buddhists, and if you read the scriptures, I mean, you'll see that. But Shakyamuni was not the first, he's not the last. There's a thousand in just this eon, just in this world, there'll be a thousand. On other planets, there have been many others. And the Abhidharma says that when he was a bodhisattva in a previous life, he caused a dissension in the followers of another Buddha. And as a karmic result of that, he has to go through this thing. But that would be a kind of suffering that's not accepted by the higher school. But there is a process by which for 24 hours a certain monk, and it also can't take place in the direct presence of the Buddha, he goes out for a while to another place, and then there's the troublemaker who splits up the monk during that time. It all sounds very, once you put it in a nice historical perspective, you get sort of this relief that you can't do it nowadays. But the reason I want to spend so much time on it is that you know and I know that most Dharma centers have some dissension. It's not the exception, it's almost the rule, and it's just, Tibetans would say that it stems from the goodness of the activity, that it attracts obstacles, that the practice of trying to improve your spiritual life attracts demons. And if you've never met a demon, you think they don't exist. The day you meet a demon, you'll know. The day you really recognize a demon, there is such a thing. There are demons.
You mean a person who...
There are people who are demons, yeah, and they do things like this. And you will know it. The day you meet one, you'll say, oh, there really are demons. It wasn't just a thing. And it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous.
But is that supposed to be a demon? No.
We cannot commit this one, but he's worse than a demon. I mean, if you meet a demon, that's a demon.
I don't get what you mean by a demon. A person?
I mean, you will meet a being who looks like a person that you have known and who you thought was a regular human being. And he'll in a very mild way suggest that you do something, try to sway you towards a certain action, and at that moment, he truly is a demon. He is a spirit who, not a human being, but an evil spirit who wants to harm you.
Why isn't he just a human being trying to harm you?
Worse than that, anyway.
But humans, all the time, humans are trying to teach you these things.
I know. Not that. It'll come at a very important time. more at the most important, very crucial time. Like when if you made a mistake, you could make up a life. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that I just want to anticipate it. As this group gets larger, or as this group goes longer, it may not get larger, I don't know. But you will meet the person in this group who irritates you. It always happens. And it happened to me. I confess it. You know, I found people that in my life, I disliked them the strongest of anybody. And it took me many years. What I say is don't give in to it and don't believe it. You know, it's a very evil thing. It's a very bad thing, dirty thing. And it'll happen. You will meet someone in this study that you really don't like. Or you will start to draw judgments about other traditions of Buddhism. And just don't do it. You know, just be happy, study on your own, do your best not to feel that way. If you can't overcome it, avoid the person. But don't ever let it reach a point where you're sure that you're right. You're wrong. And don't believe yourself. And it will come. It will come. And I will hate to see it. I know it will come someday. And it's what, you know, I've seen students leave Dharma centers because of the politics in the Dharma centers. People grabbing for power and they can't agree with each other. And it will come. You know, the longer we go, the better we do, the more sure it is that something will come. There have been horrible divisions in major centers. And I want to anticipate it, and I want to say, when the day comes, you know, maybe it already happened that you met that person who really bothered you. You said, I don't believe this person can be a Dharma student. It's probably you. And don't give in to it. Fight it. It's a demon. You know, it's a real bad thing. And it's not a tamme way. You don't collect a karma, which must take you to the lowest hell in the very next life. But I assure you, it's close. I'm sure it takes you to hell to cause any kind of disunity among Dharma students. You know, it's very, very bad. And with other centers and other lamas and other traditions, just you don't. I don't say you have to believe them, because I correctly believe. I believe that some of them are flatly wrong, and I think the scriptures show it. And I would not follow those people. I think the longer you study, the more educated you become as a Buddhist, you know, because this is the scriptures. And it makes sense. But you do not criticize them, and you do not criticize their followers. The Dalai Lama is very good that way. I've never heard him say anything like that. He's very good at, you know, the questions come, and he jumps out of the way. You know? He's very good. You know, there's a lot of things a Buddhist scholar like him could say to blow away Christians. And then on the other hand, he just takes great pains to make sure everyone feels good and that he respects the good points of each thing. I just anticipate it. And I say, you know, when the day comes, you're in this class, you go over there to have tea, somebody says something, you really hate this person. Don't believe it. Stop it at the root. Stop it at the beginning. We don't have it now. We will have it probably. You know, stop it as it comes up. It is a very horrible, bad deed. And we'll see why. The reason why, well, we'll do it later. Yeah.
Let me ask you a pragmatic question. Yeah. What if you are slave in the Dharma Center eventually now, like, where you're, say, on a governing board, you have to make decisions too, and you either have to get rid of people and or a teacher, or that's that. If I'm not going to come,
I've had this problem. There's another thing. It happens in a monastery where one monk has, he's dishonored the robes or something he's done which is flatly, we can't keep that. It's in the Vinaya. The process for removing that person from the monastery is in the Vinaya. Right? And it's required. You're required to remove the person from the monastery, depending on whether he confesses or depending on whether he gives up his viewpoints or depending on what he does. he can stay in the monastery and take a lower position, or he can, or you're required to ask him to leave. But it's very gingerly. I mean, the territory there is very delicate. In the Bodhisattva vows, you're not allowed to kick out certain people from the monastery, because they're not meditating enough, or they're not studying enough. They're concentrating on one or the other. So it's very delicate. So you have to be very careful. I think you have to be very careful. And if the person has dishonored them, you know, you have to... If the person is truly an evil influence in that group, you have to get the person out of the group. And that, it's a very hard decision. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. And you have to... I think the general thing is to think of them as your mother. If it was your mother, would you do that? And in some cases, you would, to protect the group. So it's a very delicate question. It's a very difficult question. I've been involved with that and among the monks, when we had that happen. And, it's very delicate. You know, you have to be very compassionate, and then you have to make sure that it's really hurting the spiritual progress of everyone else. So that's a big decision. The Buddha used to leave those decisions to Shariputra because he could read people's minds. One day he made a mistake and the Buddha called the person bad. He was called Helgen. Alright. So that's Genda Gyenja. By the way, this is also called the breaking of the wheel. Which wheel do you get?
What is it called?
It's called breaking the wheel of the Dharma. I'm concentrating now on the schism. Okay. It's also called the breaking of the wheel of the Dharma. Especially in the Abhidharma system, the wheel of the Dharma, the true wheel of the Dharma, is the understanding of selflessness. And during this 24-hour period, no one in the world can perceive emptiness directly. It's the nature of that disruption of the harmony of the whole world. No one can achieve a new path, a new realization. People's study is disrupted. People can't think straight. People can't recite scriptures. All these, you'll read it in your reading, but it's very... You get the feeling that it's such a horrible deed and such a terrible thing that it disrupts the vibrations of the entire planet. People cannot enter into deep meditation during that 24 hours. And it's very disruptive. It's also in a Dharma center. You know that. You've seen centers like that. You know, when it went rotten, it disrupted everyone's practice.
Could you say that it has a similar planetary effect on a lesser scale? You
know? Yeah, I would say so. I think I've seen that. So that's also called breaking the wheel. Okay. Breaking the wheel of the teaching. You know that Dharma chakra, eight spoke wheel. I think we'll take a break.
Can we get English for five, even if you leave it on the field?
Well, killing your mother.
No, so
that last one you didn't do it in translation.
Well, I'm sorry.
I think that would be an issue too.
Transliterated. The deed so bad, you know, what's so bad about it? Why is it just those five and no other deeds? All right. And there's an explanation. Things that make it so. I guess we could say four. No, because there's two combinations of two deeds.
Pembe shi
means assistance or help. Pembe shi means an object of assistance. And what it means is this shi, you had it in the study of the four parts of the deed. It was the object towards whom you did the deed. So that's here. The shi means basis, but it means the object towards whom you did the deed. How many of them are killing? What's the nature of those five people?
Kill the mother, kill the father.
Three of them are murder. Then?
Dividing.
One of them is a lie. The nature of the bad deed of the schism It's not the schism itself. It's the lie that the monk tells to produce the secret. And he proposes this new route to nirvana, and he gives this five things, and that's a lie.
So you're presupposing he's intentionally doing it, not just...
Oh, he does. Right.
That he knows better, and he just wants to divide the sangha.
He's lying.
It's not out of ignorance that he thinks he knows a better
Apparently
way.
Apparently not. It's a doom. It's a doom lie. It's a lie.
Could you explain how... And when, as Bert said, a person would want to kill a Buddha, divide a sangha, or cause evil.
It's pretty. Well, by the way, the last one is attempted murder. Okay, so we got three murders, one attempted murder, and one lie. I don't know. You know, why does anyone do a bad deed? Why do the Germans kill the Jews? You know, I mean, it's you get into a milieu which even a good person gets swept away, and you know that. You know that we're capable of very horrible things if we get in the wrong circumstances. Any one of us, we are lucky that we are not hungry and we don't need a place to stay and we don't need money for our hunger. We probably do similar things. I remember when the oil crisis happened, and I used to be so proud of Americans because they weren't like these Indians who beat each other up to get on a bus. But then there were all these fistfights broke out and people shot each other, and I remember that. And then it occurred to me we're all the same, you know. It's not that we're better, we just didn't need it. It can happen to anybody. Pemishi. So Pemishi means help. And two of those objects qualify here. There are five objects involved in those five bad deeds. Two of them are special because they have helped you.
Buddha and Yarna? Were your mother?
Or your parents. Okay. I mean, specifically, material help in this life. Your mother and your father.
Well, so that means...
This refers to your mother and your father.
Oh, the Pempeishi?
Yeah. They are an extraordinary object. When you kill them, as opposed to killing anyone else, it qualifies as an immediate misdeed, as one of the five big ones, because of the benefit they have given you. And I studied that last night. And it's very interesting. Nowhere did I see much mention of gestating you or feeding you or taking care of you or, you know. It was all, every mention of them, was that they gave you a body to reach nirvana and Buddha. You know, they gave you a body, you know, a life with which you could achieve the ultimate.
So
it doesn't matter if they're a good mommy or a bad mommy or a nice daddy or a lousy daddy or
they
gave you life. Once you have a life, you can practice Buddhism. You can reach ultimate goals. That in itself, without anything else, without any good attitude on their side, I have a lot of Americans say, "Well, my mother's lousy," you know. Well, she's not. But anyway. I mean, just the suffering, you know. I mean, just the suffering. She probably put out more suffering to you than anyone else ever will in this life. But the main thing is that they have, no one can deny that they have given you a life, which you can use to practice. And you can reach the ultimate goal. So you, there's two, I won't do two anymore. I'll do two modes. How about that? One is,
Michael, you got, how many sheep so far you said it means help?
Yeah,
that's it.
Means object. Object of help. It
object of help.
Two of the five fall into here, mainly. Modes of thinking going on when you do, that also are in play. When you talk about what makes the deed an immediate deed, what makes it so bad, there's these two attitudes towards the Pembishi. These two attitudes are in your mind towards the Pembishi. So one is the rejection of them. One is to say, you're mentally, before you can kill your parents, you're rejecting the idea of, almost you're rejecting the idea of your own Buddhahood. See, it's some kind of rejection of the benefit they have given you. There's an attitude of rejection.
When you say it's like rejecting your own Buddhahood?
You'd have no recognition of what they are. You're rejecting that concept. You're rejecting the idea that they have given you this benefit. So the first part of the attitude is that you're rejecting your parents.
could you also say by extension you're rejecting, because of emptiness, you're rejecting that, you know, it's your projection, you're seeing, you know, your stuff, not really your parents, and it's your own inner karma.
Ultimately, if there's anything bad about your parents, it's you, and the day that you recognize that, you'll be close to arhatship, because then you won't do violence against this illusion. Okay. Rejection and elimination. Eliminate means you actually take steps to kill it. You create, the sutra says, you create conditions for the non-continuation of your life force. So, you kill them. You eliminate them. So those are two attitudes going on. One is sort of a rejection. It's like a estrangement from, you know, this thing I don't need, this is garbage, you know, you're getting ambitious. Say, Yun Deng Yi Shi.
Yun Deng Yi Shi.
Yun Deng Yi Shi.
Yun Deng Yi Shi.
She is the same, the object. And Yun Deng means extraordinarily, I don't know how you say it. Yun Deng means an extraordinarily good personal quality. What would you call it? Fine quality? Extraordinary quality? And that would apply to the last three. What were those?
Sangha and Buddha.
Yeah, Sangha and Buddha. In that order, actually. They are just an extraordinary, and we talked about it with the Bodhisattva. You know, it doesn't matter what your intention is much. It doesn't matter much how you want to take it. Even the completion is not so important. It's just that they are so holy that anything you do towards them is magnified. And I always tell people, I think we mentioned, it's like somebody who has the last, if somebody had the last bottle of the last, of the only cure for AIDS, you know, if that were possible, if there could be a what do you call it, vaccine or, you know, some kind of elixir that would fix people with AIDS, which doesn't exist now. And if one person had the only, better than all the AIDS vaccines that were ever invented, it's more important and more rare in the world, more valuable. So that that person becomes a Yin-Ding Yi-Shi. Anyone who holds that bottle is a Yin-Ding Yi-Shi. You reject them and you eliminate them in two cases, right? You reject the arhat and you eliminate him. You reject the concept of unity of the sangha and you break it. What about the Buddha?
You try to eliminate.
Yeah, you don't eliminate. So they say, you know, when you're debating, you have to say, yeah, the elimination doesn't exist on the fifth one.
But you cannot. Try.
You try. You reject. Mentally, you reject a Buddha. And that, apparently that rejection has a lot to do with the badness of the deed. The fact that you don't care anymore, or that you have no reverence or no feeling. You really believe this thing is garbage, and you undertake to kill it. The mental rejection of what he stands for is what gives the deed a lot of its power. And the same with the unity of a Dharma group. You know, it's very, very common. You know, a person takes his own interests or his own opinions to be more important than the unity of the group. And that's not true. That's not correct. You know, there's times when you have to, and it's hard for me, I'm a very stubborn and individualist person, but, you know, there's times when you have to, you must keep your mind on the importance of the unity of that group, even if it's not exactly what you want. You know, and that's more important than your personal feelings at that moment. Yeah.
That goes so far as to, you know, go along with the wrong view simply because the majority of the group really thinks it's true,
well, then you could
be divisive if you set them straight or attempted to.
I think normally what happens with a schism is that the person who's creating the schism really does believe they're correct. And normally it's a misconception. You know, the other people can see that the person is just being assertive, you know, or they're just being stubborn, or they're just hung up on what they want. And, you know, I'm not talking about these extraordinary cases where suddenly everybody in the Dharma group agrees that abortion is okay, and then and then you have to leave that Buddha because you can't, you don't want to be a part of that. But that's a different thing. But I'm talking, the normal schisms that happen are personal differences between people. And they're not philosophical usually. I wish they were, No, if they were truly philosophical.
Well, look what's happening with the Kagyus. That's pretty deep.
I can't judge it. I don't know. But it's a terrible thing.
It certainly is.
It's very terrible.
Deep division.
It could happen to anybody. It could happen to us too. I just don't want it. There'll come a time when you feel like it. There'll come a time when you really don't like something. And there'll come a time when you maybe even think you have a conviction that this thing is wrong. But examine it very carefully and try as hard as you can to. The unity of the Dharma is very important. It's really important. You just have to look at that. And now I'll give you the real thing. That unity is the Dharma body of the Buddha. That's what the scripture says. The Dharma kind.
The unity of a group,
a Buddhist followers, is the Dharmakaya. I mean, it's an expression of the Dharmakaya. That's how heavy it is. And we'll talk more about it.
So how can you break the Dharmakaya even if you want?
So can you tell us a little? Can you say a little more? About
I will.
That?
I will. I will say more about it. Okay. So that's what makes it. I'll say it in the next. In the next thing I'm going to present, I'm going to finish on time. Which of them is the least? Should I say that? Which do you think is the worst one of the five? Now I'm going to give you the five in order of badness. What's the worst one of the five? Isn't it worse to try to kill a Buddha?
You can't kill.
Well, try it.
But you could really break up. You could really break up the group.
No, but the bad deed is not to kill. The bad deed is to try to kill.
But you can't kill, so it's not as bad as...
No, the bad deed is to try. The attempted murder of a Buddha is the bad deed of the five. It's not the killing. Attempted murder is...
What's bad for you personally? Yeah. As opposed to dividing up the Sangha? Well, if it only lasts for 24 hours, then...
Sleep it off.
That's more just for you again, personally, I suppose.
They say that the schism is the worst. From the point of view of the result, especially, it must have a result of one eon in the lowest cell. Must always.
Oh, the result is there for you. Then you ought to have been ahead
of. As far as the result. Also, they say, from the point of view of damage to the universe, attempting to kill a Buddha is in a sense trying to hurt the form body, right? A schism, they say, is an attack on the Dharma body.
So the idea is there are many form bodies in one Dharma body? Maybe?
Yeah, that's true. Is it technically the Dharma body? Yeah, it is.
So it's an aspect, a manifestation of the Dharma
it
body.
It is. It's the expression of omniscience. It is the omniscience. I mean, that's... Anyway, that you can read it in the reading. It's an attack on the Dharma body. It's an attack on the body of the Dharma. And it's worse than an attack on his personal body.
Michael?
Yeah.
I understand that the extreme is actively trying to break up the Sangha, but what if when you didn't know better you made some bitchy comments?
No, it's good that you would wonder because it's probably motivated by that you did it. Our practice is the practice of concentric circles. I heard a monk Dobum Tuku explain it to me one time. He was a Dalai Lama assistant as well. And a monk is not supposed to have sex with a woman. And so he has to stay in this little circle here. And outside of that, he can't touch a woman. And outside of that, he can't look. And outside of that, he can't spend too much time with a woman. And then, like that. Outside of that, eventually he gets in this outside circle. Okay. If I never go within this circle, I'll never go within this circle. It cannot happen. So the morality, they say, is the same. You stay out here. Don't let yourself say anything bad about your fellow Dharma students. If you don't let yourself think anything bad. If you don't, then you won't get to say anything bad. If you don't, you won't get to say anything that splits them up. If you don't split them up, keep yourself, the idea of morality is to keep yourself away. When we do our confession, we say, in some Chipadam, Joy Joradam, Joradam, Chipadam, Vidasabadam, you know, we confess the deed, the bad deed. Then we confess the preparation for the deed. And then we confess the preparation for the preparation for the deed. And then we think we confess the thought to get ready to prepare to do the deed. So, I mean, when you're doing your month confession, so you have to stay that far away, stay outside. It's just your morality is like that. You're not gonna kill somebody. You're not gonna burn down this modest little dharma center. But you have to stay on the outside. You have to stay in that last circle. You know, stay outside of that last circle. Don't even let yourself think it. If you don't think it, you'll never do it. It's very important. It's really, really very important. There will come a day when it's important. You know, and let's think about it now. Keep it in mind now. It's a big, bad deed.
You said earlier that as, say, the group progresses, that there's more of a chance that would happen. Why
well,
would that be?
Well, not necessarily, I think. You can have the groups that get sweeter and sweeter, right? But I think it's still a little bit new for everyone. You know, like the group out in New Jersey, we've been there for 20 years. And
there's never been anything.
There's never been anything. We're very lucky. But what I mean is, I mean in the sense of getting hardened to the sweetness of the Dharma. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, once you've heard what I'm saying a few times, the third time you hear me explain this thing, it won't be very fresh. And you'll be thinking, I wish you would tell us something new tonight. And that's a very bad attitude. Mm-hmm. I mean, I go to Rinpoche's class, still go to all his beginning classes. He's just supposed to get deeper and deeper and sweeter and sweeter. But what I'm saying is that it could reach a point where you get more and more hardened to it because you didn't take steps when you first heard it to do something. So it's very important that the first time, the first few years of your Dharma study, it's very crucial because you won't be as open to it. Okay. I mean, it's crucial to actually carry it out, to actually start changing if you can, because later you won't. There's nothing different about the second time you hear it that's going to make you change it the first time you didn't. Okay. What's the second worst one?
Buddha.
Yeah, attack on a Buddha. Third? Fourth?
Mama.
Right. And the poor guy is always getting better. Alright. Those are the order of severity.
The Bodhisattva's not in there. Can the Bodhisattva on it?
Now that you mention it,
Mahayana.
No, it is. They do have Bodhisattvas in the Abhidhamma. I used to get real confused. I'll give you the five near bad. I mean, there's a second five. They're called the close ones. And they say they're close because they're close to the five immediate. And it's not on your homework anything, but I just thought you'd like to know. The first one is to
in order of severity or traditional?
I don't know, this is traditional order. I don't know about severity. The first one is to rape your mother, who is also an arhat.
You're an arhat, she is?
No,
she
is both. Okay. She's both your mother and arhat. That's pretty terrible. Second one is to kill a bodhisattva who is called a bodhisattva of certainty. And certainty in this case means he only has 100 kalpas to go. There's
only 160,000 years each one.
No, trillions of years.
Only 100
kalpas to go. To kill any one of the seven high practitioners.
Which are what?
I don't know. Right. But I believe it's people who have achieved the practice. And to steal the property of the Sangha.
That's cool.
Yeah. that's something I can do. We can do. And what's the last one? Oh, the last one they say is the one which is parallel to trying to harm the Buddha, and that's to out of a feeling of anger or hatred, etc. So I guess it's any one of these things. To destroy images or altars or temples. And, so those are the five. Keeping the finances in the government. I keep them pretty creative. But anyway.
And these will also go to hell?
Yeah. They say, well, what's the difference then? And they say it's a little bit lighter. I mean, there's a big debate about it. The result is also to go to hell. These five. These secondary five.
In the next one.
It's not very clear to me, I'll tell you the truth. It seems to be in the next one. And they say it's a little bit lighter, and then they say that's what the Abhidharma say, meaning they probably don't believe that. I couldn't figure that out. I didn't spend much time actually. Somebody in the reading, you'll see, they come up and they debate and they say, but didn't the Buddha say that the most serious bad deeds were the mental ones? And then they say, yes, he did say that. And they say, that was only with regard to the three passageways. What are the three passageways? Body, speech, and mind. So the first three of the ten, he said, when the Buddha said that, he was talking about the ten bad deeds. The first three are physical, the next four are verbal, the last three are mental. So of those three divisions, the mental ones are the most powerful, are the worst. And then somebody says, well, wouldn't killing be worse than having a wrong view? And then he gives the example of this meditator who murdered people in concentration. But anyway, not a Buddhist, but the mental ones are much worse. And then they say, which of the five? Then they quote another scripture that says, Lokta, which is one. That wrong view is the worst. So they say, well, that's not even in those five. And he says, no, when they say wrong view is the worst, they're referring to the five bad views. And wrong view is the worst.
What bad views?
There are five bad views.
What is that?
It's not part of the lesson tonight, but just if you want to know. Okay. Take you to 905 if you don't mind. And I don't do them in order, all right? One is called Tanvingitala. That means to believe that everything exists the way it looks to you. And on the other hand, to think that if it didn't exist the way it looks to you today, it doesn't exist at all. And nothing matters. So those are called extreme views. You can see how you could flop from one to the other. We live in the one. The minute someone talks us out of it, we flip to the other one. That's one. Jigso Latawa is to take you and what belongs to you as being self-existent. That's actually the nature of the first link of the Wheel of Life. Sujin Dan Tushu Chongzing Latawa means to practice mistaken kinds of morality and asceticism. I think that that's a great thing. You know, the examples are, there was a school in India that said you should meditate for years and years, then plant a spear face up, a trident, and then you should be standing on a chair, you know, and you should jump down on it. And if it goes through exactly through here and through here, and if you have the right motivation, then you achieve nirvana at that moment. And that, you know, or you've seen things where people need to practice mistaken kinds of morality and asceticism. I think that that's a great thing. You know, the examples are, there was a school in India that said you should meditate for years and years, then plant a spear face up, a trident, and then you should be standing on a chair, you know, and you should jump down on it. And if it goes through exactly through here and through here, and if you have the right motivation, then you achieve nirvana at that moment. And that, you know, or you've seen things where people beat themselves. And you've seen people who practice things with the... I've seen people in Buddhist centers who were told to do a certain number of prostrations. They did it. It got to the point where it hurt them, physically handicapped them. And they were told to go on, and then now they can't walk straight. They can't walk. They have to use a cane, you know. You have to use common sense. Your body is very precious. You have to take care of it. You can't hurt yourself. You know, just going and being hungry or being cold or being hot is no big shake. When you go into meditation, you want to be very comfortable. You know, I stock up on it. I like the kind of food I want to be. You know, it's important. Quiet, happy, comfortable, healthy, bright. You know, concentrated. That's the idea. Not to hurt yourself. Then there's Dawa Chongzin, which means to think that your wrong views are great. It's another kind of wrong view. This is really good. But when I say that, it doesn't mean that, you know, if you do your retreats, your laterals, it's a 4, 5, 6 week thing, and it hurts a lot. I mean, there are times where it really hurts. But that's a different thing. Then you've got to have guts and keep going. That's a different thing. I'm talking about damaging yourself permanently. But, and also, if your mind starts to get crazy, you have to stop. But to stick it out when it's getting unpleasant is a different thing. You have to do that too. Okay, last wrong view is what? Oh.
That's it.
I need 5. Extreme view. Mm-hmm. View of me and myself. Mm-hmm. Which is called view of the perishable self. Mm-hmm. What was the other?
Being glad that you're...
Yeah, that was 4. That was 3. And in 4, I love that. Did we miss one?
Yeah.
Sure.
5.
Did you want about being glad you lost your own view?
No.
Did we do
that? 4.
Mm-hmm. Thinking your views are the best and then wrong view. Backwards view. Don't we have 5 yet? Let's do it.
Thinking your views are great and then wrong view.
We can say extreme view. And then you could so call perishable view. And then you could mistaken morality. And then and practices, right? Meaning extremism.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, thinking your views are bad. And then the classic wrong view. Which is where you say, no, karma doesn't exist. If I do my bad deeds in private, and no one ever finds out, and everything's okay, nobody is, that's fine.
You made a point of saying the presentation was Abhidhamma. Any difference between my head and my
In these 5 views, no. Same.
No, the other...
Basically, Mahayana accepts almost all the details of the Samme, of the 5 views. There's a few details that are not. What do you think? I mean, for example, an Abhidharma would say you get an aura from a tamme, from an immediate bad view. What happens if you commit 2? What if you do 2 in 1 line?
You get an aura from a bad deed?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Any powerful karmic thing you do.
Oh,
you take a vow to serve in the army, you get an aura.
You get 2?
They say your aura gets heavier, you know, brighter, you know, something like that. And then there's a big argument about, you know, well, does the second one ripen in the very next life? Because then, what, both of them ripen in the next life? Because if it ripens in the life after, if it has to wait in line to ripen in the next, well, then it's not an immediate. And you can imagine why they think that. Okay. So be happy you're doing really, I mean, just to talk about these things is great.
In the Madhyamaka Prasangika, can you describe for me the whole progression of the creative karma, what happens, you know, the bhakshan?
Everything's the same, except where it stays. Amazing, just stays in
there. So you do a deed, at the end of the deed, the bhakshan results, stays in the simple me, has the potential.
You can say steam and mind in its own right. You
okay.
Know
the okay. Has the potential to be pain or pleasure in the future when it arises. The thing that I would like clarification on is the aspect of the how this box chakra arises as your perception, and ultimately when you collect enough box chakras, how that arises as your projection of enlightenment.
If I had only two, I would never have gone.
I don't get it, though. I mean, I don't get.
Oh, it's just this. There is data. There is outside data.
Yeah. So
there is wet and tone.
Yeah.
And you and the way the box operates that creates your impression from that.
Right.
It creates your interpretation. And you don't have a choice.
Wow.
I think that's where most people fall down. Versus nihilism. Say, if they're one of those rare teachers that gets to the point of explaining how the bhaja works, then the student swings to this extreme of thinking that they could willingly control it.
Well, and how do you...
Just through, you know, you can program your perception through patterning, essentially.
Well,
perceptual patterning is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
perceptual patterning is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah. Will of course of mind. Yeah.
If it happens, everything's happening that night.
You mean as a result of it?
Well, have it done.
Uh-huh. That's by the way why temper is worth it. You know, you decide to take a risk in business.
It was about 10 years ago.
And you know, it works out in more cases than not. That's all common. Pattern is pretty much cool.
So you have this wetness matter, this substance, this wet and flowingness that arises for some reason, that you encounter for some reason, and your bhakti.
Actually, that's also when you focus on the
really,
yeah.
Kind of
for another reason of more intense.
Right. All the way down to the smallest and smallest plants. But the idea is that you have to encounter the wet, whatever it is that you're calling wet. You have to encounter the infinite smaller parts that you're labeling as wet.
Right.
So whatever it is that arises in your encounter that you interact with and label and project onto, your bhakti causes that arisal and encounter. And in the case of enlightenment, then you've done so many good deeds and you have so many positive bhakti that the stuff that arises can only be the raw material, if you will, of positive interpretation, pleasurable interpretation.
Ultimately, everything.
So, in the case of me seeing myself as a Buddha when I become enlightened, it's because, not because I just fooled myself into seeing myself as a Buddha, then, as Tom would say. Because there's where it confuses this aspect of tricking yourself into seeing yourself a certain way.
The point is that this is this whole point. It is only a projection.
Try not to.
It is only a projection.
It's not tricking
it. It is only a projection.
Yeah.
And that's all anything out
of it. Right, I understand that.
Now, is there a conscious thing you can do to pretend you know?
That's the issue. The issue is that we normally, as I normally think of perception, it's a learned behavior.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, you will plant the box that will cause
there are practices that we can't talk about.
Right. So the idea of this learned behavior is not what we would normally think of as like.
When you're talking about that particular moment.
I'm just talking about. No, I'm not talking about tantric practice. I'm just talking about, like, if I sit down here and I say everything's empty, and I intellectually remind myself that everything's empty, that's a learned behavior.
That's true.
That's a learned pattern that I'm creating.
It's learned.
And so, does that learned pattern result in my experiencing? Does my sitting here saying everything's empty and oh yeah, I'm perceiving my projections and the loser risings, and does that result in a pleasurable box shot being planted that results that arises later that I must see?
Noble, you know, it depends on your intention. If you're studying emptiness for the purpose of getting pleasure from yourself,
Hang on, Mark, I'm coming back. And if you're not, you know, the result would be Hinayana. The same show result would be
So the idea is that the collection of merit, the idea of the collection of merit is that it requires a vast number of bhakshats leading to pleasurable perception.
It's a very cold and self-interesting problem.
Yeah.
And I people object to that. And I don't see it. I think if Buddhism is a method, if it really is a method, then it should be a transferable, transmittable, cold scientific method.
Right,
you
right, right.
Do these things, you will get that result.
Right.
And you do it quite knowingly and selflessly and self-interestedly. And there's no problem with that. That's what you do. And that will help you prioritize your goals. Mm-hmm. There's lots of good things you can do. And I think when you get it to a certain point, you got it.
So I'm setting out to do this collection of as much and many positive, pleasurable bhakshats as possible. And the idea is that my nirvana or my enlightenment will be nothing but the ripening of pleasant bhakshats that I must be forced to see in a certain way. Here's the key for me is if I have a bhakshat, which is to bring me pain, say, as in past bad deed, then it say, and I have this intellectual understanding of emptiness, and this negative seed arises, and somebody hits me on the head, and I go, oh well, you know, karma, emptiness, I understand it. You know, it doesn't really bother me so much, but I still get hit on the head and it hurts. You know. Is this is this bhakshat that just arose and caused me pain but not a full pain, you know?
Right.
Are in some way these negative bhakshats being mitigated and lessened by my overall patterning, you know? It does work that way?
Yeah, it doesn't. By the way, what would be the practical makeup? You know, you would look like a fool.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't respond with people, other when ignorant people, which are called infants in the scripture. You think you should respond. And you would act in a different way.
Uh-huh.
You'd act like Jesus and stuff.
Right.
Jesus up there.
And everybody says,
nails put into him.
It's okay.
And saying, you know, I don't even offend him, but I don't know. Or whatever. Or he's actually
it
doing a
comment.
He's trying to you know, in the classical interpretation, he's using that suffering and wishing that it could represent the suffering of all of you. That's the classic reaction to suffering. That would be the most profound reaction to anything you didn't know. And they're not going to nail you up to the cross. The guy's going to come and help us. You know, that'll be your chance.
Mm-hmm. In Majjhima Prasangika, the idea of everything is our perception. I have a tendency, you know, we talk about projecting onto the blank screen. I have a tendency to see myself projecting outward onto things. And I think what it really, tell me if I'm right, I think what it really is everything coming into me and being interpreted internally, not me projecting myself and my perceptions outward. It's like a drawing in.
There's a whole separate thing from a separate concept that you might tend to project in it. You know, psychological projection is much different from chronic projection. Psychological projection is, when I go into a bus, I look at women's fingers and look at their diamonds. I can't stop myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at me like...
psychological?
No. And then those people who sell shoes, they always look at the shoes. You know, that's some kind of psychological thing.
But that's not projection, Michael. Projection is when you change
it's
interpretation.
Well, first of all, it's your karma to look at rings.
You
can't believe everybody's wearing these rings today. You know, it's not that everybody's wearing
this. Projection is more like you.
Or you see everybody as nasty because you're nasty.
Yeah, because you're feeling.
Yeah, that's ultimately a karmic result. But it's not the kind of projection I'm talking about.
What I'm talking about, for example, I look around this room and I go, yellow wall, or, you know, white, red table, you know, statue, etc. And rather than me projecting outward onto
matter and stuff out there. I'm really taking all this stuff in to me, and it's like in a way staying in me and being processed in me and registering in me. And it's like the world is almost in me happening, if that makes sense.
The day that you perceive not ultimate reality,
yeah.
but the day that you perceive relative reality,
yeah.
which is a big deal. It happens the same day when you catch yourself doing what you're doing, which has nothing to do with intimacy. It's the projection process. When you finally see yourself doing it,
yeah.
you do have the sensation of it being inside the head. Because it's all happening right behind the edge of your eyeball. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
There is that. And if it's, you're looking, the object that you're looking at, the parts are external.
But it's all the interpretation
but,
is internal.
But the perfection, the perfect image of that thing is in your mind. And all you ever saw is that. All you ever reacted to is that.
Yeah, there's all definitely all the stuff out there, but it's not.
It's that is out there.
All the. Yeah, perception is in there.
So, at the level of tantra, this idea of reprogramming your perception?
You mean kirim, which means pretending to be a tantric being.
Well, generation
state. And
that's
true. No, yeah, that's generation state, yeah. That's okay.
But it, does it actually do anything
yeah,
other than plant seeds for completion stage?
No, it doesn't test its own function.
What does it actually do?
You really want to know?
Yeah.
The virtue of trying is a tongue jerking lay. It's a lay that ripens in this life.
Just from trying.
I distinctly, I remember.
So visualizing yourself with a light, not even the channels, not even the basic channels and trying
to over here.
Yeah, not even that. Just the light body of the right, of the form body.
Yeah, and all the things that it needs. You have to be. There's a section in the commentary that says just pretending to have that kind of shape has very little effect. It's trying to imagine what it would be like to be such a holy person.
So in terms of the specialness of the practice, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you just did your long rhythm meditations,
it would work, but taking a long time.
So how is it that you still have to remember the long rhythm meanings when you're doing the tantra? So how is it that
speeds
anything up?
The virtue of trying.
Wouldn't that simply still apply to long rhythm?
Trying. Yeah, the virtue of believing. It's really the main element. Is the virtue of believing that everything around you is already
empty?
No.
Oh, a deity, no.
Believing it.
There's
no mistake.
See, this is where I get into the question of just willing it, the perception.
No, that's
aspect.
Very close to willing it. What it does is it is a karmic result. It is a normal process in the box I think but it's so powerful that it starts to work in this way.
This is what I was asking you before about just.
No, there
Pattern
is real.
Yourself.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. That's a tone you feel that fits into the Abhidharma system.
But how is that different than willing yourself to see, to not see something as painful? See what I mean?
It's got the background of sutra practice. It's got this background of sutra knowledge. So you're doing all the right things. Yeah. But you can't, even that doesn't work immediately. Tone you feel that you're really
So you.
But there's a special virtue. To not doubting that already the world around you is dead and everyone in it is dead.
So it's that box shot which you're getting these things up.
Yeah.
And that's the same idea with seeing your deity, your teacher as the Buddha.
Yeah.
Same concept of that special virtue that speeds things up.
Yeah.
That's strange somehow if there's a special virtue just by being willing to believe.
Yeah, when Rinpoche gets to tantric, he says, I'll just throw all that logic. But then he's teaching logic because everything has to be logical. No, but it is logical, the belief.
Well, it follows that you can believe because everything else has made sense.
Yeah.
That there would be a virtue associated with simple, pure belief.
Yes, so there is.
Interesting.
Not just belief, but like a conviction that it has to be
acting based upon that, living based upon
that.
In a way, it's not saying you believe this, it's saying that my life is based upon this, and I'm acting based upon this.
Yeah.
Is this why it's the result in path? Because you're just making it happen now by force of will, essentially?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me.
Yeah.
It almost seems to me like you are willing yourself
to think and act that way, yeah. And so it results, and therefore it is.
Yes. And it's just the good karma of acting on that is enough to make it happen.
It's almost to me like the whole body of the deity and all the external body of the deity and all that. It's a trap in you. If you have this mental idea of I am an enlightened being now.
Oh, you get both.
You get what?
You get both.
If you forget about a particular form of Vajrayogini or Yogantara, I'm saying that outer form, you know? Right, that's what I'm talking about. If you just say, I am an enlightened being, I channel those of an enlightened being, they're like this, my behavior, my thoughts are like this, I'm an enlightened being. Just that is resultant, not sitting there, I'm red externally, I have a red light body or a blue light body, or, like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I think at a point, it's more like recognizing what's there than trying to imagine it. You see, if your sutta practice is good, I think it's more that it starts happening to you, not that you're trying to do it. Just the recognition of what's happening.
And so it almost seems to me like it's more important to just pay attention to the idea of the concepts in the channels and those visualizations, rather than my body's red externally, red light body or blue light body, and let that come on its own, and whatever it sort of manifests out, it manifests out. Is that wrong?
Well, I do whatever your teacher tells you to do. Yeah. Right. I think you have to follow that. I've never regretted, there's been things that were very hard for me, like sitting down for months and doing 100,000 mantras. It just didn't seem like something that I wanted to do. But I did it, and I had a nice result.
I'm thinking of doing it, maybe in this next couple of months.
That's a great thing.
Is there anything to be preparing in it, right now?
You gotta think, there's this Mundo practice, right?
Right.
The Galupa Mundo is to do some extraordinary
things. That's it.
So it could be anything. It could be whatever you choose.
So like giving money or,
Or finishing the study of one particular book. Something extraordinary.
I don't know what qualifies as extraordinary anymore. Huh? Pick something? Thank you.
Sasi Brahi Jashimeta Jam Vira Vinci Nyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogunanda Shimba
This is the end of Class 9.